Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, bringing you the latest in local and regional news in collaboration with our partner media outlets. Our first story today is by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie on the upcoming launch, an invitation for home movie submissions to be featured at the inaugural Home Movie Day at the Screening Room this October.
The Kingston Film Heritage Project and Vulnerable Media Lab have partnered to bring a Home Movie Day event to Kingston in October. Home Movie Day has been an annual celebration of home movies and immature films held at venues worldwide since 2003. Started by a group of film archivists concerned about what would happen to all the home movies shot on film during the 20th century. The event gives community members an opportunity to see their films on the big screen, as well as have their memories digitized for free. Home Movie Day events also often include tips for preserving films. It was announced that Saturday, October 19th, will be the inaugural event for Kingston, taking place at the Screening Room. All proceeds for this event will also be going towards All Our Relations Land Trust, a charitable organization led by Indigenous peoples committed to supporting and protecting the environment in the Kingston area. The theme for films this year is transience. To learn more about this first-time event for the city, CFRC sat down with organizer Adam Cook. Here is a bit of that conversation. This year, the Kingston Film Heritage Project and Vulnerable Media Lab announced Home Movie Day 2024. So this has been kind of a named event since early 2000s. What is Home Movie Day?
Yeah, Home Movie Day started over 20 years ago. Basically, a group of film archivists were concerned about what was going to happen to all the home movies shot on film specifically during the 20th century, a kind of concern that we share at the Vulnerable Media Lab, which is housed in the Film and Media Department at Queen's. And it's an annual event held around the world with different participating cities where local home movies are exhibited for a public audience. This is the inaugural edition in Kingston, and we're really excited to be the ones hosting the first ever Home Movie Day in Kingston.
Yeah, awesome. What was sort of the inspiration to bring it to Kingston, and how are you and your team feeling about spearheading this inaugural year?
Yeah, well, it comes naturally to us working in the Vulnerable Media Lab, which is a state-of-the-art historic media transfer remediation and restoration research lab. Basically, we scan, digitize, and restore various media, including celluloid film, but not limited to it, mini DV tapes, VHS, et cetera, et cetera. So we're always looking to embark on new projects internally at the lab, but also curatorially. We like to, engage with the public, engage with Kingston, and specifically with the Kingston Film Heritage Project, which we've been running for some months now. We're looking to engage with the city's history, archival materials of the city, and now in the case of Home Movie Day, material produced by locals or people living here. It's okay if they're just passing through, too. Our theme for the first edition is transience.
Yeah, for sure. And could you get into that theme a little bit, transience? What was the choice there, and what does that mean exactly?
Well, what it means is something that we're happy to leave to the interpretation of those curious about submitting. Transience, of course, could really be used to describe home movies and vulnerable media in general, of course, the temporary nature of things, of material, but also the passage of time. Home movies are typically linked with nostalgia, so it seemed fitting to go with the theme of transience, but we wanted to keep it as open-ended as possible to let the folks who might have some home movies up in their attic or whatever that they want to dig out, some creativity when they're thinking of submitting to us.
Awesome. Yeah. And you describe this media as vulnerable. And of course, it's in the title there, Vulnerable Media Lab. I was wondering if you could get into a bit of what that means.
Yeah, well, of course, I'm sure people kind of envision celluloid film, 16 millimeter, 35 millimeter, Super 8, what have you, as being vulnerable. We know that it deteriorates over time unless it's kept in really ideal conditions. We do have our own vault, our own archive in the film and media department where we preserve a lot of different film. But actually, digital media is arguably just as vulnerable. It's a bit of a misnomer that it's celluloid film that is. So really, any kind of media, including contemporary forms of it, are all vulnerable to different forms of expiry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So I guess this event, yeah, it's about nostalgia, preservation. And yeah, are you hoping that this event will continue to be an annual thing in the future? Or are you guys just kind of rolling with it this year?
Well, ideally, yeah. I think it would be wonderful if this could be an annual event in Kingston and ongoing as part of the Kingston Film Heritage Project. What it actually turns out to be is really in the hands of the people listening to this right now. Submissions are open now, and we are open to anything, really. If people want information about how to submit their home movies, potentially have them digitized for their own posterity, and then potentially projected on the big screen, they can do so now. If they go to the Screening Room website, because that's where we will be hosting the screening, you'll find information there, or they can email me at 22ac18@queensu.ca for more information. So it's up to the people who submit their home movies what kind of content we'll get, and how much, what the volume of submissions will be. Hopefully it's popular. It's important to us to keep the barriers to a minimum for this event. So it is pay what you can, with proceeds going to a charity, all our Relations Land Trust. And we'll be accepting submissions for the rest of the month, and then hosting the screening October 19th at 1 p.m. at the Screening Room.
Awesome. Yeah. And like you just said there, there's still quite a while to submit. Have you received any submissions so far? How's it looking?
Well, the submission process, we wanted to kind of make as easy as possible, both for those submitting and for ourselves. So submitting your home movie actually doesn't involve sharing your home movie with us. You just have to fill out a quick form. Honestly, it takes about 5 minutes to fill out. We just want to hear a little bit about what it is that you are thinking of submitting. And then based on that, we're going to contact a handful of people and get in touch with them about getting a hold of their home movies. And those are the ones that we'll digitize and project on October 19th.
Submissions for home movies to digitize and feature at the screening are being accepted until the end of September. You can visit screeningroomkingston.com for more details. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News on Kingston's very first home movie day.
Thank you, Chris. Coming up next, we have a report by Owen Fullerton, local journalism initiative reporter for YGK News, on the commencement of modular bridge building over the LaSalle Causeway. Our proposal to begin building a temporary modular bridge on September 19th was greenlit on the morning of September 12th. Public Services and Procurement Canada announced on July 19th that a temporary modular bridge would be built to restore vehicular and pedestrian access. The proposal from Priestley Demolition Inc., who also handled the recent demolition of the causeway, was open for comment through the Common Project Search Registry until September 4th, and its status was changed to approve last Thursday morning. Public notices were placed earlier this month informing of the proposed plan, which would see work on a temporary modular bridge to replace the Bascule Bridge, ready for public use by the end of September, with openings planned once per month midway through October and November. While it's good news for a number of Kingston businesses who have felt the impact of the closure, and commuters who will have another option to get across the river, businesses that rely on access to the waterway have some issues and questions that remain unanswered. Mark Ackert, who captains the Kawartha Voyager for Ontario Waterway Cruises, Inc., doesn't understand why this work couldn't be pushed off another 2 weeks when the Rideau Canal will be closed for the season, and says he made that objection known throughout the comment process. I'm really perplexed at the choosing of the date, Ackert said. How did they choose the date? It's been closed since the 1st of April. What's two more weeks? The other objection we have is that the vehicular traffic does actually have options. Once they close that to marine traffic, there is no option. It's closed. Ackert said the permit also included a provision saying that the bridge opening schedule for the 2025 schedule wouldn't be discussed until late December, and he says that is far too late for businesses to make informed decisions about their upcoming year. He says the decisions being made are unprecedented. A lot of people have to make decisions and plan and schedule in advance, and we're already 60% booked for next year for 12 times going through that bridge, Ackert said. I've seen a total of 37 brand new bridges and major retrofits over our waterways. None of them have stopped navigation for weeks on end, none of them. So what makes this bridge in Kingston so special? Eric Ferguson, who operates both Kingston Thousand Islands Cruises and Kingston Trolley Tours, says while it's good news for Kingston and the Trolley Tours side of his business, this modular bridge shouldn't be coming at the expense of a navigable waterway. He says while the lack of communication around next year's schedule is reason for concern, it's clear that the proposed schedule for October and November won't be enough for next season, and that boat operators don't want to dock in the Inner Harbor without more clarity on that. There is no other way into the Inner Harbor for boats other than the LaSalle Causeway. That bridge must lift more frequently than they've announced so far, Ferguson said. It's just not feasible to expect that we would go in without knowing when we can get out. Earlier this year, local cruise lines almost took to legal action after botched repairs to the LaSalle Causeway forced ships that were expected to be in operation to be moored. Chris Shelley, who owns General Brock Commissary, says for downtown businesses, a two-week difference is significant, and having access to the bridge again is overdue and has been difficult for businesses to contend with, especially when already contending with trying to rebound from COVID. He says if the bridge had been closed without the tourist season to soak up the loss of East End business, the impacts could have been devastating. Tourist season for us is tailing off, Shelley said. Comparing this to last year, we're noticing the difference. If this happened in, let's say, October and went over Christmas, it would be deadly, he added. And thank you to Owen Fullerton for that story. Up next, we have a report by Michelle Dory Forstell, local journalism initiative reporter for the Kingstonist, on lower costs to Kingston police over move-in weekend at Queen's University. Kingston police's costs were significantly lower during the 2024 Queen's move-in period than during the same period in 2023, according to the local police service. In advance of the Kingston Police Services Board meeting on Thursday, September 19th, 2024, Chief of Police Scott Fraser has published a report summarizing police activities during the Queen's move-in weekend. Mainly attributed to overtime incurred by the enforcement team, total costs for both weekends came to $23,489.98, a 55.5% reduction compared to last year's costs of $52,823. Fraser notes that the Friday of the first move-in weekend, that is Friday, August 30th, was quieter than anticipated. However, there were still areas of concern, most notably at the Gord Downey Pier on King Street. Due to the University District Safety Initiative, the pier was closed and fenced off every night from 8 p.m. until 6:30 a.m. However, Fraser indicates there was an influx of people bypassing the barriers and entering the area, resulting in extra calls for bylaw and officers upstaffing. Fraser also notes that the Hub Entertainment District on Princess Street between Division and Barry was also significantly busy in the early Saturday morning hours, with students, presumably second to fourth year since move-in day, had not yet occurred, he said. Besides issues at the pier and saturated numbers in the Hub area, the demeanor of the students on Friday was generally good, Fraser noted, with people milling about and exploring but not causing significant problems beyond a few Liquor Control Act infractions. He writes that Saturday was significantly busier, with approximately 3,000 students taking over University Avenue by 10:15 p.m. Fraser reports that with only six upstaffing officers and City of Kingston bylaw officers available, the incident commander directed the officers to contain the area for public safety. The crowds were likely made worse after an event on Tyndall Field ended, he says, and while there were no fireworks or projectiles involved on Saturday, Fraser states that the attitude from students was that of transient and loitering drunken behavior. City of Kingston bylaw personnel expressed some concern when the area was not declared a nuisance party, Fraser notes. However, given the resources available, the decision was made to limit the risk of harm to attendees and officers through containment containment and selective enforcement. Liquor enforcement was conducted on the outskirts and two Queens-related arrests were made, according to the police chief's report. The pier was an issue yet again on Saturday, Fraser writes, but students were peaceful and not causing problems. He notes that a few individuals from a criminal subculture element were spotted loitering in and around the grounds. They were dealt with and moved along. Of particular concern in Fraser's report was the construction area on Aberdeen Street, with multiple students entering the site, climbing on equipment and loitering. There was also a large crater-like area at the corner of Earl and Aberdeen Streets, described as a swimming pool, which the chief notes has and will continue to pose a significant risk to public safety. The City of Kingston should consider expediting construction in this area prior to homecoming, or it will be a safety concern and pose issues for police and bylaw on many levels. There were no street gatherings on Sunday, September 1st. However, the chief notes that there was an unusual congregation at Victoria Hall residence, where around 900 students gathered on the front lawn of the complex. Queen's campus security did call in out of concern due to sheer numbers, but the students were peaceful and not causing problems, so police action was not required. Fraser also notes that some traffic enforcement was required for unruly drivers after kids were caught showing off with their vehicles and driving irresponsibly. A significant number of highway traffic infractions were laid as a result. On Friday, September 6th, Queen's held an outdoor concert on its property near University Avenue and Union Street. Following the concert's conclusion, Fraser notes that many students made their way towards the University District and the Hub Entertainment District. Less than ideal weather resulted in most students moving indoors, which prevented a street gathering, the report says, adding that the extra officers available for the night were not required after midnight and therefore ended their shifts early. There were no major issues reported by the officers or bylaw department, the police chief says in the report. On Saturday, September 7th, Fraser notes that there was a Queens football game in the afternoon at Richardson Stadium, as well as a semi-formal held at Grant Hall, which attracted a lot of students and kept them away from the university district. The semi-formal event concluded at 11 p.m. and there were no significant issues to report. Fraser writes, it should be noted that the two-tiered approach has been very well received by students. In fact, many of the officers who were in attendance relayed the same information. As in the past, we are utilizing Part 3 summonses to allow for the potential of higher fines and in-person court appearances. Due to the volume issues at court, the summonses are being reserved for the most egregious behavior and other fines are being issued on regular offense notices. Police laid 163 charges for Liquor License and Control Act violations, as well as 24 Highway Traffic Act charges. Bylaw officers issued 105 tickets for failure to abide by signage, 4 for amplified sound, and 42 for yelling and shouting. For the 2 weekends, fines laid by the Kingston Police Enforcement officers totaled $19,535, and fines laid by the City of Kingston bylaw officers totaled $16,920. Fraser noted that the Kingston Police expenses for the Queen's move-in were mainly attributed to overtime incurred by the enforcement team. Some minor costs were incurred for equipment, supplies, or meals that have not been posted or calculated at this time. And thank you to Michelle Dory Forstel for that report. Coming up next, we have a report by Local Journalism Initiative reporter Ted Evans of CJAI Amherst Island Radio on the Great Lakes Islands Alliance announcement of its first ever strategic plan.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
The Great Lakes Islands Alliance announced its first ever strategic plan spanning to 2034. The plan looks to address challenges facing Great Lakes Islands, such as emergency preparedness and general communications. The main focus of the plan is building the Great Lakes Islands Alliance into the go-to connector organization for the island communities involved. Member of the Amherst Island Community Alliance, David Pickering, notes one of the more important issues the island has taken on since becoming a member of the Great Lakes Islands Alliance.
One of the things that we've discussed in detail at the Community Alliance was a report from one of the other islands that actually did a emergency exercise for one of their islands and found that it failed miserably. because of poor communications, lack of interoperability, and a variety of other things that meant that they couldn't achieve the exercise objectives. And it sort of came as a big call to wake up and start over again and come up with a better emergency plan, because this didn't work. And certainly that in itself is encouraging the Community Alliance to discuss with the new fire chief, as well as the township, the state of emergency planning for Amherst Island.
Pickering explains how Amherst Island's representative at the Great Lakes Islands Alliance, Paul Juniper, brought back the idea of a winter carnival.
Probably the most significant was the entire winter carnival. Paul arrived at one of the meetings for the Community Alliance and said, here is the schedule for the winter carnival. They are now doing their 56th annual one. Maybe we could put something together. And the Community Alliance hit the various service organizations like Ames and the Museum and the Women's Institute and so on. And everybody said, well, we can support this particular event. And they turned around and they made it into a program and they invited people. And apparently it was quite successful.
The Alliance's leadership team developed the plan over the last year. The four primary goals in the Alliance's foundational charter helped shape the creation of the plan. The four goals are facilitating connection between island communities, improving information access, encouraging multi-island collaboration, and amplifying island voices. With the new plan, the Alliance also looks to improve its environmental and socioeconomic program areas, central operations and capacity, and long-term sustainability. While mainly focusing on island communities, the Alliance also recognizes the importance of raising awareness of island life among mainland audiences, including governments and the general public. The Great Lakes Islands Alliance is set to host its fifth summit this year from September 22nd to 25th, near the Les Chinois Islands of Northern Lake Huron. The summit provides an opportunity for islanders from around the Great Lakes to come together to learn about each other's communities and share solutions to the various economic, social, and environmental challenges facing islands. This year's event will feature more than 20 speakers, panel discussions, and guided tours. The event will cover a range of topics, including tourism, island schools, youth engagement, media, biodiversity, and emergency preparedness. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
And thank you to Ted Evans for that report. And now it's time for the CFRC Environment Canada weather report. Tonight, we're going to have clear skies with a low of 13. On Friday, sunny skies with a high of 26. And Friday night, a low of 16 with clear skies. Saturday, September 21st, we'll have a mix of sun and cloud and a high of 25. Clear weather on Saturday night with a low of 15. And on Sunday, we'll have sunny skies with a high of 24 with cloudy periods that night and a low of 11. And now it's time for this week's Release Radar in partnership with the Kingston Music Office. We're pleased to share a new single by Kingston's own Lotus Shaker called Visceral Response, streaming now on your favorite platforms. Marking a thrilling evolution in their sound, Visceral Response blends heavy progressive music with Brittany Langford's commanding vocals, exploring a raw weight of grief with the artwork anchored in a personal cherished memory. Want to get your music featured in Release Radar? Fill out the survey today at visitkingston.ca/music. In the meantime, please enjoy Visceral Response by Lotus Shaker right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Impact the intent.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time.
Listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. My name is Cindy. This is Absolutely Frivolous. I'm here every Thursday at 5:30. Been doing this for a long time. Very happy to be here. It rejuvenates me. You ever want to even think about volunteering here, do so. Go to CFRC.ca. Look at the volunteer section and all the different things you can do here. I'm telling you, it's worth it. It's worth being a volunteer here, participating. You meet all kinds of different personalities. You get to do all kinds of different things. It does look good on a resume. Definitely check it out. I've been doing this little comedy thing, I don't know, a long time. And I really enjoy it. I enjoy preparing for it. I enjoy playing it. I enjoy talking about this stuff. And at the station, the comedy I play, and the people I meet here is also wonderful. So yeah, check it out if you want to become social, or if you want to do something that is not social, you can also do that here. It's a great spot. It's a gem here in Kingston and frankly the world. I'm just going to say it. I'm going to put it out there. It's one of the best things in the world right now. But there's my little show, and I like to play comedy on it, and it's a lot of fun. I have to say, I try to bleep all the swear words I can, so if I have missed any today, I apologize. We're not here to offend anyone. If you don't like the topics and you find them offensive, I'm sorry. That's not our intent at all. Please maybe turn the sound down until the next show. There's always something for everyone here at CFRC. So if you want to find the schedule, it is also on CFRC.ca. And you know what else is on that website? Events in this area, the area of Kingston, Ontario. I'm just looking at it now. Saturday, September 21st, there's going to be a Kingston Public Market at Springer Market Square. Actually, tomorrow on the 20th, YMCA will host its fresh food pop-up market featuring healthy food options that won't break the bank. So that's at the Y, I believe, and probably the one that's, I don't know, in Calvin Park. That's what it's called. Also, you can attend a Pet Bowls pottery making workshop and learn to make custom pet bowls at Amaranth Stoneware which actually I've been to many, many times. I love it there. The teachers are really good there. They're friendly. They're helpful. And I love their one-off workshops because my life is busy, as I'm sure yours is. But sometimes you just want to get your hands on some clay. And go to Amaranth and check it out. Their website is great. You can register for lots of different kinds of workshops. This is awesome. Pet bowls, pottery. I feel like this is a good time to make those gifts as well for friends who have everything. And I think a pet bowl, if they've got a pet, would be an awesome Christmas gift. You can get it done now. You're done and ready for Christmas. It's an awesome idea. Other things that are coming up, of course, is the Kingston Memorial Center Farmers Market on Sundays. Starts at 9. We're still outside. I think it's October that we are going into the barn, which is awesome too. But I like being outside and the weather's been so good. Definitely go check that out this Sunday on September 22nd. It's there every Sunday, whether we're outside or in the barn. It's a good time. So much good food. So many dogs. Oh, I love that part of it. Love the people. Everybody's in a good mood. And the baking, the fresh veggies, the mango lassi drinks. Oh, my God. So good. All right. I'm getting hungry, so I'll stop talking about that right now. And I'll play you some comedy. Today, we have one comedian. She's Canadian. It's Mae Martin. If you haven't heard about her, I don't know. Something's wrong with you because she's so good. She's so funny. She's so cute. I love her, and I hope you will, too. Here she is, Mae Martin. She's going to talk about her Canadian mom, mostly because she spends a lot of time in England. So here she is, Mae Martin on CFRC 101.9 FM. This is so nice. How's everyone doing? Is everyone good?
Year. We've had a weird year, would you say? Weird year? Yeah. I've been going around the country and I've been saying to audiences, the world these days is, what would you say the world is? It's shit. Yeah, it's pretty much it. I've been going all over the UK doing that, going, the world is pretty much unanimously. People are like, it's shit. And then I was in America. I did a show in America and I went, the world is silence. And then one woman just went, ending. It's like, what should we go home? I'm from Canada. Any Canadians? Cool, good. We're staying where we are. It's a safe place. But my mom, Wendy, lives in Canada. She's not coping with the state of the world. And I called her after Trump got elected, like 2 hours after the election. I was like, God, I wanted moral support. I was like, God, it's bad news, right? It's really pretty bleak. Long silence. And she just goes, well, I've canceled my gym membership. 2 hours after the election, she was like, well, I think when the world is on fire, Zumba's gonna seem like a supreme waste of my time. So intense. But they're mostly concerned, my parents, because I'm a single woman. Anyone who's single? That's fine, I don't know. They're stressed. My parents are like, forget North Korea. We need to find you a spouse. They're really stressed. And I'm trying to get into it. I'm trying to get into being single, but I'm like quite romantic. I don't know. I think I'm a romantic person. I was at a dinner party the other day. I get asked to dinner parties. Sure. And we were playing that game. Do you know that game, Fuck, Marry, Kill? Yeah, where you say three celebrities and you say, if you had to, hypothetically, who would you fuck, marry, and kill? And I hear myself be like, fuck no one, I'm too fragile, marry everyone, kill myself. Is that an option? I'd like to date myself. Okay, only because I would text myself back so fast. It would be so relaxing. I'd be like, hey, that quick. You wouldn't even see the gray ellipsis when someone's typing, you know, the dot, dot, dot. It'd be like, love you. How are you? Scared. What? So I'm dating boys again. So I've been pretty much exclusively in long-term relations with women for the past decade. But now I'm mixing it up. I'm dating men again. Quite a weird time in the world to be like getting into men. You know what I mean? It is weird. Like my friends are like, have you read the news? I'm like, and like it turns out they're all pretty much disgusting. I'm like, well, I just got here. It sucks, but I'm getting into it. But no one believes me that I'm attracted to men because I look like I'm in One Direction. That's fine. No one's buying it because I look like the blonde one from 1D. I'm saying the blonde one like I don't know. His name is Niall Horan, and he's a Sagittarius. Yeah, even I feel like even the boys that I go on dates with don't believe that I'm into men. Genuinely. Okay, I went on a date with a friend of mine. Like, so we were in this bar and we'd had a few drinks and we started making out. I'm kind of a legend. And all of a sudden he just stops and he goes, God, this is so crazy for me. And I was like, oh, why? And he goes, I'm not even gay. I was like, I'm a girl and you're a boy. Like, this is the definition of straight. They could not get... He was like, sorry, you know what I mean. I was like, no, I don't. What do you mean? He was like, sorry, I guess I've never been on a date with a lesbian before. I know. I let go of his penis. Slapped it away. I don't get offended because my whole life I've been told I look gay. People are very comfortable telling me, they're like, you're gay. Like, ever since I was a kid, me as a kid, I was like this big as a kid, and always wore a suede waistcoat, a bow tie, suspenders, red tartan trousers. This was like my look, and like leather shoes, and I was just like, ugh. I was like this kind of Victorian serf. Like, I was like a kind of Dickens character of just like, ugh, a lot, like too much flourish for a child, a lot of deep bows as a, oh, at your service, my liege. Ugh. Really gross. Long limbs. Like, I feel like kids at school would open their lockers and I'd just be inside, like, ugh, like a gas lantern. They'd be like, you're in the wrong era. Yeah, but so people have always been like, you're gay. They tell me, and even as an adult, they're like, you're gay. Your hair's gay, your face is gay, you dress gay, you talk gay, you walk gay, you're gay. I don't know who that is. I feel like that's like my cool New York godmother. Like, once a month she takes me out, slice of pie, cup of coffee, you're gay. She writes it in every birthday card, happy birthday, you're gay. In England, though, this is very exciting. My parents are very worried about me, though. My parents, Wendy and James. Give it up for Wendy and James, please. Please. They're the best. They're so worried about me living overseas. Like, they're just worried about me being alive on this earth in general. But my mom, Wendy Martin, poor Wendy, is so anxious. Like, the sentence that she says more than any other sentence in the English language is just, oh my God. That's her level of stress, her base level that she just operates on all the time is just, oh my God. Like, I'll speak to her on the phone a lot. She'll call from Canada. She's always like, how's the weather? How's the weather in London? Just furious about it. I'm like, oh, it's fine. It's like a little bit damp. Oh my God. You're gonna get spores. Is that a threat in England? Spores? She's stressed about it. Today she was like, what are you doing this evening? I was like, oh, actually, I'm doing a BBC gig. Oh my God. Could make you or break you. Thanks, Mom. Oh, cool. I'll just relax then. They're calling like twice as much as they normally would as well. They're very concerned. I just got out of a long-term relish. So they're very worried. Thank you for your sympathy, by the way. Thanks. It was a three-year relish. It was a proper like long-term. I think one of the early signs you're not mature enough to be in a long-term relish is you're abbreviating the word relationship. I can't get through the word, but it's fine. We broke up in December and I'm fine, guys. I'm so good. Just catching up on my reading. Just reading her Facebook page. As if it's a thriller, I'm reading it. But you know what? Who's single, by the way? Okay, good number. Do you feel... the only time that I really feel alone, and I'm like, oh no, is when I'm trying to put a duvet cover on a duvet. The loneliest task. Something about it is so bleak. I get halfway through doing that, I'm like, I'm gonna go write my will. I'm gonna sleep in the bathtub tonight. Yeah, but I am. It's fine being sick. But my mom. So I went home to to visit Canada after my breakup, and my mom used the opportunity of my breakup to like broach some topics with me, because I was in a relationship with a woman, and my mom was like, she was like, your father and I are very sad, obviously, very concerned, but we were wondering, silver lining, have you thought about switching it up? I don't talk to my mom about like the intricacies of my dating life, but I do really like men. I've dated men in an eclectic group of very lucky men in my life. Like I got Tinder as soon as I was single. I got Tinder, or sorry, slightly before I was single. I got Tinder, and you know how you set your settings on Tinder, on that dating app, to like attract a certain demographic. So you'll put like, you put age. I put 18 to 700. To, and you put the gender you want to attract. So I put my settings to match with men and women. I was really surprised by not just how shocked my friends were in England, because they've only known me to date this one girl, but they were annoyed at me about it. Like my friends were like, they were like, what? They were like, no. Like, but your hair. They were like, you lied. Like, how did I lie? I didn't mean to. They were like, you lied with your hair. Yeah, but I did. My first boyfriend when I was 13, his name was Ian Peach. I think we only hung out like twice, but we were in love. And Ian Peach broke up with me on speakerphone while all of his friends were laughing. They were in the room laughing. Aww. Thanks, 10 of you. What, 80% of you are like, yeah, fun. That seems normal. It was the absolute worst. It was so harsh. And he had brought a CD player in, and he was playing our song over the phone, which was, he was playing our song, which was Aerosmith's Don't Want to Miss a Thing. That was our song, because we slow danced to it at a party, and he got a semi, so that was our song. That will always be our song. And he was like, look, I don't think we should see each other anymore. And then I hear these peals of laughter, realize like, his whole class is listening. I'm over it now. Like, I rarely discuss it publicly. But I was doing an interview recently for a magazine, and the structure of the interview was 10 rapid-fire questions. So they were like, this will be really fun. It's word association. Just say the first thing that pops into your head. Easy questions. So we start off, and it's like, what's your favorite ice cream? What's the best thing about London? Like, easy stuff. We get to the final question. They're like, last question, rapid-fire. Why are you gay? As a rapid-fire question. And I was like, panicking. I think if I'd had any time to, like, think it over, I would have come up with something vaguely progressive. Like, I think labels can be divisive, and I don't feel the need to identify as anything other than a human being. But I panicked and said, maybe Ian Peach in grade 9. For real, the first thing that came to my mind was his face. And the worst part is, and I wish I had written this as a joke, but you can Google the interview, they've misquoted me, and they won't change it. And I'm now on record as saying, in answer to the question, why are you gay, they've put, maybe eating a peach in grade 9. It's the worst misquote. My mom has a Google alert set up. You know, you can set up an alert on Google where if keywords come up, you get an email. So my mom has one with my name, of course. So my mom got an email with that interview, and then I got a phone call like, oh my God. And she was like, is it true? She was like, I don't understand. We gave your brother the same peaches. And they're really worried. My parents are great, though. They're very, very liberal people. Like, they were kind of hippies when I was growing up. Like, very progressive. My mom, in particular, real hippie. Like, she told me about sex when I was 5 years old. 5 years old. And she sat me down. She's like, you gotta have the facts. And she had hand-drawn diagrams. Hand-drawn. Imagine her sitting drawing them by herself. It's like, just get a book, buy a book, print them out, you know? But she had them, she was like, look, this is how a man and a woman have sex, and a man and a man, and a woman and a woman. Like, covered all the bases. In the same conversation, she told me there's no Santa Claus. In one conversation, it was so much to absorb. I was like, oh my God, all the parents of my friends, like, despised me. The first day of school, I ruined Christmas and told them what anal sex was. The first day of school. But yeah, they were super liberal, open-minded. She told me in that conversation what an orgasm was. I was 5 years old, didn't need to know, but she was like, you need the facts. And the way she told me was bizarre. It was so steeped in imagery and symbolism and stuff. This is what she said. And I've checked with her, by the way, and been like, did you say this weird thing about orgasms? And she's like, yeah, absolutely. And I stand by it. This is what she said. When two people love each other and they're naked and they're hugging, they feel very happy and then they feel increasingly content. And then she said, this is what she went with, they reach a moment of extreme happiness and an explosion of rainbows cascades across the sky. That's what she went with, an explosion of rainbows cascades. Like, imagine my disappointment. I was livid. She didn't mention like the crushing loneliness you feel right after. Right, guys? You know? Sometimes even when I'm by myself, I fake it. Just. I'm like, oh, that was great. I'm just gonna go pee. I don't want to feel lonely. I don't know. But yeah, they were really liberal, my parents, and I'm always surprised when my friends are less progressive than my parents, like people my age, like young, cool people. Like, so I went home to visit Canada, and I was catching up with all my old high school friends, and one of my friends from school, we were reminiscing about, okay, do you remember, I don't know if boys do this as much, but girls play this game. We call it house in Canada. In the UK, they call it mums and dads. It's basically, it's so weird. You know, yeah. It's basically when you're like the ages of 9 to 12, girls on their lunch break at school get together and they basically act out the darkest improvised soap opera. Do you know what I mean? It's so weird. And like usually one really bossy girl casts it first and she's like, you're the mom, you're the dad, you're the brother, you're the sister. Then she'll like narrate what you're about to do before you act it out. And it's always super dark. It's always like, okay, you're the dad, you come home, you're drunk, you smash a plate, everybody's crying. Okay. You, Stephanie, you're the mom, you come home, you say you want to be a professional singer, nobody supports you, everybody's crying. Then we call the police because of the domestic dispute. The police come. It turns out the daughter's pregnant with the police's baby. Go. Act it out. Go. And then you, like, act it out. It's so weird, right? It's bizarre. And we were reminiscing about it. And she was like, do you remember you used to always be the rebellious teenage son? And I was like, yeah, Zach. Of course I remember Zach. And she was like, I wonder if that was a sign that you were going to be gay, like that you were always the teenage boy in the thing. Like, I wonder if that was a clue you were going to turn out gay. And I was like, if that's true, what does that say about Iris Chen, who always wanted to be the dog? There's always one weird girl who's like, can I be the dog? Like, yeah, like nobody else wants to be the dog. And you're just having your cool game and she's like around your feet, just like, like oh. She was, I'm going to go in a minute, but can I talk about Iris quickly? She had amazing sleepovers. Like, I really miss sleepovers. I miss just, you get a group of kids together in somebody's basement having a sleepover. You experience every possible human emotion over the course of one night. Like, by the time your parents pick you up in the morning, it's like you've been through a war, right? Like, you're just like, you don't know who your best friend is anymore. You don't know what... But I miss that. And she was, her great sleepovers at her house because her parents would go out and we'd have the house to ourselves. And we would get really scared, but like in a fun way. Do you remember, like, it used to be fun to be scared at that age because you're scared of fun things like serial killers. And you know, like, and now I'm scared of like not getting on the property ladder and it's like not fun. It's not like a fun fear. But so there would always be a moment where she'd be like, did you hear that? And we'd all be like, oh my God, there's someone in the house. And she'd be like, we need to get a weapon. We need to arm ourselves. And we'd go up to the kitchen. There's always a moment where she'd go, I heard the upstairs toilet flush. The toilet flushed upstairs. There's someone in the house. And we'd all be like, oh my God, the killer is so relaxed. That he just took a shit in your house. And he flushed. You guys have been so nice. Have a great night. Thanks. I'm Emma Norton.
We are the Arcade Fire. You're listening to CFRC.
Did you recognize that sound? That's the sound of a healthy, well-cared-for cat. I truly hope you've been lucky enough to hear that sound before. The feral cat population around Kingston and the surrounding areas has grown considerably over the last few years. And thanks to organizations like Kendra's Community Kitties, these feral cats are being fed, medically cared for, spayed, neutered, flea treated, dewormed, given winter shelters, and placed in loving homes whenever possible.
Hundreds of these special animals have been rescued by Kendra, and many of these wonderful felines are purring right now, safe and healthy.
But rescuing and rehoming feral cats isn't easy. It requires an enormous amount of time and effort, and there are a few ways you can help.
You can donate to Kendra's Community Kitties on their website, kckitties.com. Even a small amount will help pay for medication, spay and neutering procedures, and food and supplies to keep these felines sheltered and healthy in the cold winters or extreme heat of the summer. Because some of these kitties are not socialized, Kendra has committed herself to provide 22 dishes of food with fresh water every day, 365 days a year, to six feral colonies. Food prices have increased significantly, so donations of food and money are always needed. Funding assists with the process of finding homes for these cats as well, as it takes time and money to find the right individual or family to be matched with the right kind of cat. You can become a foster family for our feline friends. Go to kckitties.com and learn how you can care for and love a cat or even a family of kittens until they can be moved into their forever homes. At the colonies, Kendra plants the seeds of trust and socializes the feral felines when she brings them food at the same time each and every single day. So they're more accepting of humans when placed with foster families. But fostering a feral cat is no easy task. Kendra cannot take these cats from the colonies unless there are foster homes willing to commit to help these kitties gain trust with humans.
You can adopt one of these special cats or kittens. If you've already been thinking of getting a furry friend, reach out to Kendra at kckitties.com and she'll provide you with all the information you need to make this important decision.
Any help you can offer Kendra's Community Kitties will be tremendously appreciated. Not only by Kendra, but by the lucky feral felines she rescues.
And hey, maybe, just maybe, one day you'll get to hear
Panda say I love you.
Keep up with all things like